Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
We're going to play that call in its entirety. We'll do the first main chunk of it and all that silence at the end. And then I'm going to ask some questions about it, okay?
That's fine.
All right, so let's just scroll back.
9/8, 2008, 20 hours, 44 minutes, 54 seconds. 911
emergency from Hernandez,
8.0.
My wife's been shot and there's a guy in my house
that
I shot.
Is he hurt too? Did he hurt you?
I hope she did.
Okay.
My wife hurt.
What's your name, sir?
Tom.
Where is your wife in the house?
She's in the room, like in the hall in the bedroom. She's been shot bad.
Okay. Where is she shot at, you know?
Yeah, I think in the head. I was going to move her over and start doing this. She's a guard, so I don't know what to do exactly.
Okay. And is the guy still in the house, do you know?
No, he's in the garage. He pushed me by and ran on out.
Okay.
I know that he's ripping me off. He's trying to rip me off.
Do you know what his name is?
Mike, I'm going to fuck you.
Is he white, black, and Hispanic?
Black, he's black.
How old is he about?
I don't know, 40-ish.
He's laying on the ground, he didn't get up?
Yeah.
He's laying on the ground, he didn't get up?
He's in the garage.
Okay. I'm going to comfort you with medical too, okay? Don't hang up.
Oh, God. Karen, oh, fuck.
special.
More than enough to tell them to do all their fun that in the table.
Sir, can you hear me? Sir, sir, come back to the phone.
Oh, fuck. I can't roll over her pants. She's just got blood everywhere.
She's got blood everywhere?
Blood in the street, stuff everywhere.
You can't move her?
I can't get control. Come try again.
We gotta try to do CPR. I need you to try.
Dispatcher tell Mr. Randolph to open?
The front door.
And not the garage door.
No.
So, going back to the beginning, do you remember near the beginning, maybe about 2 minutes and 20 seconds into the call, the fire department saying you need to focus on your wife to do CPR and him offering to go locate the gun near Mr. Miller?
Yes.
Do you recall about 3 minutes and 40 seconds into the call, once again asking him to do CPR and the defendant saying, I'm going to go lock the garage now?
Yes.
Remember the fire department kind of responding, look, we've got to do this quickly?
Yes.
Do you remember approximately 6 minutes into the call as the fire department starts to give him instructions about putting his hand on the breastbone to do compressions? The defendant offers to leave her again to open the door.
Yes.
Do you remember the fire department saying no, that he needs to stay with his wife?
That we need to keep doing this, yes.
Did those three intervals cause you concern?
Yes.
Why?
Because Sharon Randolph wasn't being helped. It's over 6 minutes into the call before he starts the chest compressions.
Do you recall the portion approximately 2 minutes and 58 seconds into the call where the defendant says, I heard the shot?
Yes.
Okay, we've addressed why that was a concern to you.
I heard shot. I don't hear distinctly the word the.
Okay.
But it's in context of, is he alone, meaning Mr. Miller?
Based off of your being present for the interviews and listening to interview number one, is that different than what he's saying on the 911 call?
Yes. And now having listened to the call again, you had asked a question earlier about his referencing a mask. Yes, Your Honor.
It's okay. You had just mentioned just real briefly that there was something that you wanted to add. Is that correct?
Yes.
What did you want to add?
You'd asked a question if he had referenced in the 911 call the ski mask, and there is no mention of the ski mask throughout the 911 call.
Okay. Do you recall around 3 minutes into the call, around 3 minutes and 40 seconds, the defendant going to retrieve the gun?
Yes.
Or saying he's going to retrieve the gun. Now, how long does he put down the phone for before he comes back?
Approximately 25 seconds.
Do you hear any conversation between the defendant and the 911 dispatcher, the fire department, during that 30-second interval?
No.
Now, do you recall that happening around 3 minutes and 40 seconds?
Approximately.
Okay, so that time of retrieving the gun is the time where he said the light went off in the garage, correct?
Yes.
But that's only 3 minutes and 40 seconds into the call.
Correct.
If he had started the call at the very moment that he closed the garage door, does the garage door still have another minute and, 28 seconds before it's supposed to lock itself? Well, let's just do the math. If the call starts at 8:44:54, if 3 minutes and 40 seconds elapsed, can you do the math on that? Well, let's just make it easier. That portion, that finding that happened at 3:40, right?
Yes.
Is 3 minutes and 40 seconds less than 5 minutes and 8 seconds?
Yes, it is.
How much time does it take from your testing of the garage for the light to shut off?
5 minutes and 8 seconds.
And his looking for that gun in that garage is happening at 3 minutes and 40 seconds into the call.
Yes.
Not 5 minutes and 8 seconds.
Correct.
Does the defendant make any remark of, the light just went off, anything like that when he came back onto the phone?
No.
I'd like to talk about the Santa Fe. I finally have a copy of that, so I'd like to... Oh, yes. I apologize. Sorry. We have this marked.
Is this 3:31? 3:32?
This time the state requests permission to admit state proposed 3:32. I don't believe there's any objection.
No objection.
Publishing 3:32. I'm going to open video Santa Fe exterior charcoal room. Playing Santa Fe exterior charcoal room.mp4. Detective, if you could, what is the date that you see below here?
May 8th of 2008.
And what is the time frame on this?
It's 7:24 p.m.
Call approximately where, if at any point in time, they're seen walking in this video?
Yes.
Okay, around what time?
It's been a long time since I reviewed it. I'll be able to tell you.
Understood.
I know Sharon comes out first, and then Mr. Randolph comes out afterwards.
And Detective, do you recall roughly where they are in this video?
This would be the entrance that's on the northeast area of the Santa Fe. And then when you walk in from the outside, walking kind of southeasterly direction into the casino. So behind the camera this way are the doors leading into the casino itself. That's Mr. Randolph.
Okay, let the record reflect that the witness is identified as Mr. Randolph in 1927 in this video. He is the figure that is standing just to the left of the slot in this frame. And the timestamp, at least at the bottom, is 3 minutes and 30 seconds. The timestamp on the clock for the camera is 1927:31. I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to play the other videos from this period.
Your Honor, if they're not going to play that, then I'd move to strike his testimony, because what Detective O'Kelly says, he said that Sharon came out first and then Mr. Randolph, and all we saw was Mr. Randolph, so I'd ask to strike the testimony unless it's there.
Okay. I'm going to publish the exterior cameras. I don't know if this testimony with respect to the interior of the photo, in the interior?
The testimony was you see Sharon Randolph first and then you see Thomas Randolph. So you need to play the parts of the video that shows that.
Well, did you see Ms. Randolph earlier in the...
I did. I didn't make comment, but I did move the cursor up onto where she was at.
Let's play it again.
So you had already seen her in that video?
Yes, I did. She's walking towards what's now called Leticia's restaurant, but it was called Cabo back then, which is consistent with what Mr. Randolph told.
So if you could, take your mouse and show us the general area where we should be looking.
You see her come out here, and then she walks, and then goes back.
So start from the beginning, and you?
She's carrying her purse in her right hand.
Okay. You tell us when you see her.
That's her.
All right, I'd like to stop at 1924:51. If you could show us. Let the record reflect the witness has identified the female who's just above, well, she's walking the distance, but it's almost like she's just above the big hanging chandelier light, and she appears to be the only person standing on the left-hand side of the photograph. I will be publishing exterior. We're going to publish, file name will be CAM 408-05-08-20-19. Detective, you let me know when you see Mr. Randolph, Mrs. Randolph.
That's them.
Let the record reflect the witnesses identified Mr. Randolph and Ms. Randolph 20 minutes, 19, and 17 seconds. Now we're going to play CAM 486-050808, 2019. You just let me know when you observe them.
That's them.
Can you take your mouse and show us where? Let the record reflect the witnesses identified two individuals walking across the street in front of a silver sedan that had its lights on at 2019-37. Calling CAM 487-080808, 2019. Reflect the witnesses identifying seeing him at 2019-32. You have your cursor there. Let the record reflect the witnesses identified two people walking from the left of the screen towards the middle. Turn your attention to the following day, May 9th, 2018. Should I just hit this blue button to get it to go back?
We're the only
host. There we go. All right, great. Perfect. I know that the early morning hours, there's that interview number one, but later in the day, where do you go to on the very next day? Do you attend something?
Yes, I attended autopsy.
All right. You were present for the entire procedure, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Detective, when bodies are brought into the medical examiner's office, is there some circumstances, or maybe in every circumstance, where their personal effects that are on their person when they make it to the medical examiner's office are collected?
Yes.
Okay. Was that done for Ms. Randolph? Was that also done for Mr. Miller?
That's correct, with the crime scene analyst there with us.
Okay. I want to show you what's been marked as exhibits 187, 188, 189. What are we looking at there?
187 is Sharon Randolph's blouse and undergarments and her blue jeans.
Okay. 188.
188 is a photograph more centered on her bra and panties, but you can see the blouse and the jeans. It looks like the shirt may have been turned over.
Okay. And I believe this is, just numbering-wise, 189.
189 is the jewelry that Sharon Randolph still had that she was still wearing at the time.
Okay. Publishing 187. 188. 189. This time I'd like to also approach with what's been marked as 194. What I believe is 213. Take a look at all of these and let me know if you recognize what you're looking at. They've been admitted into evidence already.
Yes, I do recognize them.
Are these the personal effects, at least the things that were on Mr. Miller's person at the time he was transported to the Navajo Banner's office?
Yes.
Publishing 194, is this an overall of all of these items?
Yes.
Why are there some items kind of piled up on one leg of the pant and then other items piled up on the other leg?
Most of the crime scene analysts are going to utilize that area of the clothing, and you'll see the little placards that they made saying which pocket the contents came out of.
Okay. Publishing 195, that's a little bit of the close-up of those jeans, is that right?
Yes.
Publishing 196, is that a close-up of the left front jeans pockets and its contents?
Yes, it is.
Publishing 197. 198. 199. Are these some of the papers that were in his pockets?
Yes.
Publishing 200. What are we looking at here?
His wallet that was found in his left rear pocket.
Publishing 201. Are these the items that were within his wallet?
Yes.
Publishing 202. Is that his sweatshirt?
Yes, it is.
Publishing 203. Is that just another angle of the sweatshirt?
Yes, with defects marked.
Publishing 204, is this a reverse angle of that sweatshirt?
Yes, it's on the backside.
Publishing 205, what are we looking at there?
It's a Henley t-shirt that Mr. Miller had underneath the sweatshirt.
Publishing 206 and 207, what are we looking at here?
It's that same Henley t-shirt with the defects marked with arrows.
Okay. Publishing 208, is that just kind of zoom in on the collar of that shirt?
Yes, to show the size and who made the shirt.
Publishing 209 and 210. What are we looking at here?
These are the polyester cotton gloves that Mr. Miller was wearing at the scene.
Publishing 211 and 212. What are we looking at here?
Those are the size 9D boots that Mr. Miller was wearing.
And lastly, I want to show you 213. What are we looking at there?
These are the, for doing an EKG that medical had placed on Mr. Miller.
When you went to autopsy, did you learn about the trajectory, according to the medical examiner, about the trajectory of the bullets?
Yes.
After learning that information and seeing kind of the nature of the injuries, did you have a concern about what Mr. Randolph had relayed to you in terms of how things unfolded?
Judge, I object. We've heard a medical examiner who was an expert. They even tried to put in their cartoon, or they put in that cartoon through her. I do not know why this detective is qualified to make any kind of arguments about trajectory, having heard from the medical examiner.
And that misstates my question. I simply asked if he had a concern. He's a lead detective, and he's allowed to comment on the state of the evidence in his investigation.
Well, you can ask him what, based on that, he knew something else in his investigation and why he did that.
Okay. Understood. So, do you make a decision about to do something about a week later with Mr. Randolph?
Yes.
Okay. Is it predicated, is it in part based off of what you've learned at the scene, learned from the interview, learned from the 911 call, and learned from the autopsy?
Yes.
Okay. What do you do 1 week later?
Actually, the day before, we had decided that it would be a good idea if Mr. Randolph were be willing to demonstrate at the scene what happened, what we call a walkthrough. We've done this before with officer-involved shootings, where we can put the officer back in that situation contextually so that they can get a clearer idea of what happened during the shooting. So we had the idea to do that, and Detective Mogg contacted Mr. Randolph on the 14th, and he agreed to do the walkthrough with us. So we met him the following day at the residence.
There was something else before we move on. You mentioned how much change did Mr. Miller have on his person?
It was $4 and some change. I don't remember a specific amount.
And I just can't remember if I asked you this, but in the second interview on June 3rd, does the defendant say Mr. Miller gave him anything prior on the night, on the day of, before he left to go to dinner with Sharon?
That he had paid him back $100.
Okay. Did you find $100 on Mr. Miller at all?
No.
All right. So you were kind of mentioning a little bit. Why did you want to do this with Mr. Randolph? Like, what's the purpose of this?
Judge, we've just heard that.
Okay.
He asked the reason why, what are you going to do next week? And was that based on all these different things? And he said yes. And Detective Mogg set it up. So now he's asking the same question again. It's ask and answer.
Well, I mean, I'll rephrase. I mean, let me ask you this. Is this a tactic you use, or a technique that you use to entrap people? Or what's, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, is it for, you know, just normal citizens? Is it for only suspects? Like, why? Why walkthroughs?
Because it can give us clarity. Again, putting it in the context of an officer-involved shooting, we'd sit down and do an interview at the homicide office with an officer involved in a shooting, and you may have, what we call cognitive dissonance, where they get things out of order, or they have auditory exclusion, where they don't hear certain things like the gunshots, or you get tunnel vision like you hear described. And normally you can see those things in an interview. So we ask the officer then to come back, again, contextually to the scene. And once they're there, you'll oftentimes see those holes filled, or you'll see them put things in order, because now they realize, hey, this, you know, you were standing over here, or I heard you say that, you know, I heard this officer say this, now that they're back there. Because of the inconsistencies that we saw at the scene at the Randolph's house, things that to me didn't make sense, we saw an opportunity maybe for Mr. Randolph to come back and in doing the walkthrough have some of those things explained, that it would give clarity in our investigation. Maybe he would come back and we'd get a complete understanding of what happened.
Okay. So, because in theory, I mean, he could have said, you know, it just crawled to me, this is what really happened versus something else, correct?
Certainly.
Okay. But when the walkthrough happens, is the events that he's saying in terms of, like, the location of where he starts shooting, does that remain the same?
Yes.
During the course of this investigation, did you interview approximately 60 different people?
Yes, there's about 30 transcribed statements in the case file, and we talked to at least double that. Yes.
Okay. And just answer the question, kind of yes or no. You did do some traveling, just yes or no. You did do some traveling to interview some people, correct?
Yes.
Okay. This included family and friends of Sharon Randolph?
Yes.
Did it also include family members and friends of Michael Miller?
Yes.
When you start to interview these people, do you start to develop a picture about the relationship between Tom and Sharon?
Yes.
When you interview these people, do you start to get an understanding of the relationship between Michael and Tom?
Yes.
Focusing on Michael for a second, at certain points, and it may be in the second interview, I just don't remember exactly, but is there a point where the defendant suggests that Mr. Miller might have some outstanding warrants, something of that nature?
Yes.
Did you look up to see if Mr. Miller had any outstanding warrants?
Objection. Calls for hearsay. Calls for hearsay. Any outstanding warrants calls for hearsay.
Well, I think the question was, did you look that up? You can answer that yes or no, as if you looked it up.
Okay. Did you look it up?
Yes.
Okay. Did you find anything to corroborate what
objection,
the...
Objection. Hearsay.
Can I approach on this?
Yes.
Did you find any active warrants?
No, we did not.
Okay. Let's talk about one of the things you mentioned. You kind of started to get a sense of the nature of the relationship between Sharon and the defendant. Eventually, do you come into possession during your investigation a will that was produced in June of 2006?
Yes, June 6th.
Specifically Sharon's will?
Yes.
Essentially, is the bulk of everything left to the defendant in that will?
Yes, and executor of the estate.
Okay. Is there a second will that comes to your attention that's kind of dated January of 2007?
Yes.
Is that estate of Sharon being left to Colleen and not the defendant?
That's correct.
I want to ask you about, let's talk about life insurance for a little bit. Do you and your fellow detectives start conducting research on whether there are any life insurance policies in which Sharon's life is insured and the defendant is a beneficiary of those life insurance policies?
Yes.
Okay. This time we're asking permission to publish 328, which has been admitted.
328 has not been admitted.
Oh, I apologize. Any objections to? Okay.
No.
We're asking that Station Pros 328.
Reason we need to be admitted without objection.
Okay, and we did do 332, correct, Your Honor?
Yes.
I also have 331. We'll do this a little bit later, but it's the June 3rd interview. Yes. We're going to be requesting that be admitted as well.
Any objection to 331?
Just what was previously argued, but otherwise,
okay. Based on that, 331 be admitted. Is this 328?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. So, did you come into possession of a life insurance policy from Protective Life, formerly known as Chase Life Insurance?
I don't know that we got a copy of the policy, but yes, we did become aware of the insurance policy.
Well, let's just take a look at this for a second here. Oh, sorry. Okay. If we're showing you page 4 here, let me zoom in. Who is the insured on this policy? Can you read that?
Up yes, here? Sharon Kaz.
It's Sharon Kaz. That's her maiden name. Excuse me.
I'd like to turn your attention to under number 2. What is the face specified amount?
$200,000.
I want to go to section 3, beneficiary information. Who is the beneficiary of this policy?
Tom W. Randolph.
How much of the proceeds?
100%.
During the course of your investigation, did Sharon have any children?
Yes.
How many children did she have?
Colleen was her daughter.
Okay. Did she have any grandchildren?
Yes.
How many?
I believe 2.
What is the date of the signature on this application?
January 30th of 06.
Okay. And based on your investigation, it's your understanding they were legally married in 2007?
Yes.
I'd like to turn to page 10 of this particular file. What does this portion of the document appear to be?
It's showing it's a claimant statement showing Sharon Kaz Randolph as deceased.
Okay, so it's an application to receive the proceeds, correct?
Correct.
What is the date on here?
July 11th of 2008.
I want to turn attention to the Prudential Life Insurance Policy. Opening that file. If you could, in the upper right-hand corner, if you please read what this says up here.
Application for life insurance or policy change.
Okay. Who is the name of the primary proposed insured?
Sharon Kaz.
Right. Turning to page 3 of this document. What type of policy is it?
It's a term essential 20.
And what's the amount of insurance?
$100,000.
Okay. Who is the beneficiary?
Thomas W. Randolph. Junior.
And again, how does Mr. Randolph characterize his relationship?
As a domestic partner.
So it doesn't indicate husband.
Correct.
Just for clarification, this is the application?
Yes.
Judge, then I would say that it's not Mr. Randolph who clarified himself that way, it's Miss Randolph who clarified it. Or Miss
How does the application characterize it? I think
sure.
Is the best way to form the question because we don't know who wrote that.
That was going to be exactly my question. I mean, we don't know who technically typed all this information out, correct?
No, we don't.
Okay. And just to be clear, what's the date on this signature?
February 16th, 2006.
And where, what city and state is that sign at?
In Ogden, Utah.
Okay. here. Could you please read where she signs her name on page 12? Oh, it's frozen again. This is a tricky bandwidth. Okay. Was that last thing not shown? I've been focusing on my screen. I apologize. Okay. Showing you page 12 and 51. What is the date of Sharon Cause's signature here?
January 16th of 2006. Excuse me.
Going to page 27. Section 2 states what? You can read it. Can you see what that says?
It says claimant information. This section is to be completed by the individual claiming death benefits.
So who is the person claiming?
Thomas W. Randolph, Jr.
Care of whom?
Of Dorothy Randolph, his mother, at 260 South 700 East, Clearfield, Utah, 84015.
And this policy number matches the policy number on the application?
Yes.
What is the date of Mr. Randolph's signature here on page 28?
June 19th, 2008.
Opening the Stonebridge Life Insurance Policy. If you could read, what does it say right here in the middle?
It says proof of accidental death, affidavit of claimant.
Okay. Who is the signature?
Thomas Randolph, Jr.
Care of whom?
Dorothy Randolph, his mother.
What is the date of this affidavit of claimant?
June 11th, 2008.
Who is the beneficiary under this claimant form?
Thomas William Randolph, Jr.
Okay. Just to be clear, during the course of your investigation, do you speak or does your partner speak with someone at Stonebridge Life Insurance?
Yes.
And do you learn that this particular policy was an amount of $10,000?
Yes.
Additionally, based on your investigation, either you or Detective Wilson, do you reach out to, or do you speak or communicate with a Boston Mutual Insurance Company?
Yes, Detective Wilson did.
Do you learn that Sharon has a life insurance policy in the amount of $22,000?
Correct.
Okay, and that came through her work?
Yes.
And it was kind of paid, kind of garnished regularly out of her wages, is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. In total, was there $232,000 in life insurance
that we were able to find? There's no central repository to be able to find all of that.
First of all, I think you got your number wrong.
You're wrong?
Yeah. You said 332.
Sorry. Thank you. I apologize. 332.
I thought you said 332.
I'm not very good at math, so it's $332,000.
Yes, that's what I thought you said.
And just to be clear, in your officer's report, I think you said it was $323,000.
Yeah, I transposed the numbers. It's my bad.
Okay. I think at this time, I want to turn our attention to the June 3rd interview. You participated in that interview?
Yes, I did.
And Mr. Randolph wasn't in custody at the time, is that correct?
He was not.
He was free to leave at any point?
Yes.
Was he in handcuffs or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
Chairman, before you play that, it's my understanding this interview is a little lengthy. We're going to take a recess before you start playing that interview.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take our afternoon recess. During this recess, you must not discuss or communicate with anyone, including fellow jurors, in any way regarding the case or its merits, either by voice, phone, email, text, internet, or other means of communication or social media. You must not read, watch, listen, use, or media accounts or commentary about the case. You must not do any research, such as consulting dictionaries, using the internet, or using reference materials. You must not make any investigation, test the theory of the case, recreate any aspect of the case, or in any other way investigate an unknown case on your own. You must not form or express any opinion regarding this case or this client's to you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 3:25. Will be in recess till 3:40.
All rise for the jury.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.